is our first speaker tonight.
Thanks everybody. My name's Jason. I'm nervous. I'm incredibly nervous. But that's okay to me. Sorry. See what I mean? It's just like, okay.
It'll be alright.
It'll be alright. Yeah, I'm Jason, I'm an addict. Yeah, I am pleased to be here. You know, facing fears is what recovery is all about for me. And I am grateful to the fellowship, Narcotics Anonymous, and to the 12 Steps, because it's given me my life back. You know, this morning I woke up in a clean bed in my own house. I got on my knees, I prayed to my higher power. You know, I've had breakfast, I had lunch. Just stuff that's, you know, I would take for granted before, but it's, you know, it means a lot to me now because it's about self-care. And, you know, self-care was not on the top of my list. Because I just, you know, for me it was about, I used to avoid me, really. I'd gone through a whole list of blame, you know, blaming my family. Blaming just about everybody else and everything as to why I used, you know, but I take full responsibility for that now. But, you know, where I come from, you know, grew up with an alcoholic addict father. He's not around anymore, God bless him. He died of this illness, or related illnesses. And, you know, I had my first drink at a very early age. I was probably around 5. I had my first line of coke around 8. And I knew I felt from an early age uncomfortable within my own skin. And, you know, I come from a working class background, grew up in a council estate, but I went to a middle class private school, and on my first day of school, I was made to feel unwelcome, that I didn't fit in. And it was kind of like that all through my childhood. I went to secondary school and still felt I didn't fit in there. But what I noticed was to feel part of, I would do what everyone else was doing. And at the time it was, you know, it was solvents, it was puff, it was whatever anyone else was doing. I felt I would just join in with it because I wanted to feel like, you know, I wanted to be part of everybody else. And it went like that, you know, throughout school. I left school, no formal education, but started working almost immediately. But, you know, my constant companion through life was like self-centered fear, and, you know, I always found myself in isolation. I just didn't fit in socially. I don't know. It is what it is. It was what it was. And by 17, I found alcohol and, you know, cocaine. And it took me out of myself. And I felt that I could engage with people. I could go out. You know, all the stuff that I couldn't do. You know, so really, for me, it was just work, drink, cocaine. And it went like that for quite a long time. And then consequences started to pop up here and there. But I'd never blame it on my using. I'd always say it was someone else's fault. It was nothing to do with my using, my consequences, as far as I was concerned. And, yeah. So I went happily along. I'd be lying if I said there wasn't some fun along the way. But then, as I said, the consequences just started to outweigh, you know, the good times. And I had a 9-to-5 job, which really was my structure. You know, it was integral in my life. You know, and it also meant I could afford my habit. You know what I mean? and I was also working on the side, earning extra money, so I had like a double income, and I just found work was getting in the way of my partying, to be honest. And I came up with this bright idea that I don't need to work 9 to 5 anymore. And within 6 months of doing that, the consequences of my using and everything else, my whole life just went into chaos because my structure had gone. I now know this is a progressive illness. My using became, you know, daily. It became daily by now, because I wouldn't drink or use at work, but towards the end I did. And well, I had no work to get in my way anymore, so yeah, I could just do what I liked. So I thought, within 6 months of leaving my job and having no structure, things got pretty out of hand. I got involved in a situation where I was looking at a very long time in prison. And it's a prison where I found heroin, actually. It was the one drug I'd never ever seen in my life. I didn't even know anyone who took it. And, did that. Did heroin, didn't think nothing of it. I thought, right, yeah, it's a jail thing. And I came out. I got acquitted, actually. And I just continued. I still didn't put it down to the consequences because of my, you know, my actions. It was nothing to do with drink or drugs for me. It was, they shouldn't have been there in the first place or something like that. That was my attitude at the time. That's not my attitude today. So, yeah, as I said before, progressively worse. Within 2 weeks of leaving prison, I had a couple of stints at a psychiatric unit. And this is all, you know, drug-induced psychosis and alcohol stuff. Anyway, you know, call it what you want. That was my story. That was, you know, how bad it was getting. And I couldn't see a way out of it, really. By the time it just started, it still didn't get bad enough. It started getting worse, and I still couldn't see a way out. I knew nothing of the fellowships. I knew nothing of treatment. And I just thought, this is how my life's going to be. You know, by 2000, I'd got into heroin, and everything just completely changed. It was that took me to a lower level now for me, and I really sank. And I was resigned to a life of using. I thought a clean day was having a bath once in a while. I never thought I'd have a clean day. You know, and so a lot of overdoses later, self-harm, attempted suicides, you know. I just carried on, still not thinking it was anything to do with drugs. Anyway, I got arrested about 2002, and I was given the choice of going to prison or treatment centre. I went to treatment centre, did primary treatment. It was the first time I'd come into contact with fellowships. But I relapsed 2 days later. Another 5 years out there, things got worse and worse and worse and worse and worse, and just wanted to die. And given the chance again to go to a treatment centre, did primary and secondary, and I thought, I've got 4.5 months now, I'm okay. Relapsed again. And 6 months of that, I finally got blessed with a gift of desperation where I don't know what it was, I don't question it, something just snapped. I said, I can't do this anymore. It's just like total, unequivocal surrender. And I had nothing left again by this time. My family quite rightly walked away. I had nothing left, and someone suggested the fellowship. And I says, okay. I was just willing, I had nothing left. And my first meetings, I saw people, of course I did. People talking about clean time. And, you know, I just thought, it was astounding to me, you know, people talking about having years of clean time, or days of clean time, and I was like, oh God, how do you do that? But I was willing, you know, I was willing, because I thought I knew everything, and I admitted I knew nothing. And it was simple suggestions, that's what I heard. was to attend 90 meetings in 90 days and keep coming back. There's one chap used to say to me all the time, keep coming back. And I thought, well, are you struggling for members or something? I said, why do you keep asking me to come back? But you know what? I did. I just kept coming back. I just kept coming back. I've worked 12 steps, continued to work 10, 11, 12 on a daily basis. All the things I didn't think I could ever do, I take a meeting today. I didn't think I could even open my mouth in a meeting. But I'm only saying all this. This is not, this is for the newcomer, people that are new. For me, I just felt a bit overwhelmed by everything. But it is possible. It is possible. For me, it's about facing fears and being willing. Honest, open-minded, and willing.
That's it.
That's it. I think I've really squeezed out about enough that I could say. I'm on a roll now. Just to the newcomer, keep coming back, trust the process, and willingness, and if you get to bed tonight without using, tap yourself on the back and, you're a winner just for today.
Committee announcements. Literature.
I'm Rachel Maddox. I'm the literature person for this meeting, and we've got a wide selection of NA literature available. I'll be over in that room during the break if anyone would like some. And also at this meeting we give away NA basic text, and that happens at the end, to people at their first meeting, and that happens at the end of the meeting during the free time countdown.
Thank you, Rachel. The CD announcement, please, Ian. Thanks, Ian. Is David here tonight?
No.
www.naspeakers.co.uk. You can tell our real computer is coming. That's it. What more can I say? If there are any NA-related announcements, please write them down and give them to our GSR, who Stephen is tonight, during the break, and then he'll read them out after. Newcomer reps, who's doing tonight?
I'm Steve, I'm an addict. We're the male and female newcomer reps, respectively. If you're new and you want to know what we do and how it works or where to look for help, come and speak to us. We'll be over at the end of the room during the break. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. This venue has some rules. I can't see this, the light keeps hitting it. My eyes, I need to go to Specsavers. The venue asks that the kitchen is out of bounds to anyone who's not on the committee. Please be respectful of the building. In order to honour the venue's wishes, we ask no cups be taken up the stairs, and this is a no smoking building. So please do not smoke by the main door, and could we please not block the entrance to the venue? There won't be any tea or coffee available after the break, and could you just watch your cups that you don't kick them over? And if you do, can you clean it up, please? And we're going to have a break for 10 minutes, so back about 25 to start.
Thanks.